previously on Podcast Without Pretense.
That's what I like about you, Eric. You have no reservations.
Okay, Eric, you got to answer my question. Answer my fucking question now.
Hi, hello. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Ayaz Akhtar.
And we're still two-thirds of Podcast Without Pretense. We keep the show going week after week, but we haven't had all three hosts on for a couple of weeks.
Well, I mean, that's not bad compared to how it used to be. So I think this is the 11th straight episode. Thank you guys for filling in when I was out last week. And if you're following Twitter today on the day of the stream, which is a Wednesday at 9 o'clock Eastern, I said, find out the fate of Sandman Sandine, which is Eric's Twitter name. He's just out at dinner. So
yeah, he's on a dinner date. He made a dinner reservation and forgot about it.
Yeah, so that was that's the fate of Eric Sandine. He's probably eating something nice. Hopefully it is cooked to his specifications.
Yeah, I'm guessing he's probably just finished the appetizers, moved on to main course.
Yeah, he's got a lovely dinner date, I assume, and it's going very well. So let's wish him the best, and also fuck you for not showing up.
Make sure you stay tuned to the episode to get regular updates on how Eric's dinner is going.
I really hope we get those live. I want just a live vlog.
Just keep remembering to occasionally say, oh, and Eric has been dry, like his drink has been drained for the last 3 minutes, and there is no waiter in sight. More on this as the story develops.
I'm going to text him on Messenger here, and I'm going to make sure that I will update us as we go along. So last week I wasn't...
That's not guaranteed to screw up a dinner date at all.
Hey, look, his Liz knows how stuff works, okay?
Yes, that's true. So you were going to say something else before I interrupted you. What was that?
Let me explain why I wasn't here last week.
Oh, man, fun. This is a story.
All right, so guys, here comes the story of Audrey the Flying Dog. So as you've seen on this show, every now and then you might hear me after the stream is over. I say I have to take care of my dogs. I have two. They live right over there. Mostly they live around this apartment and outside. So I have an air conditioner in the window still because it's been a very unseasonably warm December. I haven't taken it out. And I had the accordion side because on each side there's two accordions, the little spacers or covers. And I had part of it open because, you know, it was nice out. So you have the air coming in. So last Saturday, I was at dinner with my Liz and my son. And Liz was getting a phone call. And we're like, oh, I said, please don't answer that call. She gets a second phone call. So she's like, I better check this out. So she takes the call. And so she tells me that there's a dog outside and they think it's ours. And we're like, that's crazy. We live on the fourth floor. There's no way that's our dog. How the hell did she get out? Because, you know, you got to get through the door. You got to get through the other door. And then she's like, let's check the drop cam. So I check the drop cam, and there's only one dog, which means Audrey jumped out the window, which was horrifying. So I
four
ran
stories
from
up.
Four stories up. I ran from the restaurant, which was about... This is all true, by the way. This is not some, like, big gag and ha-ha. So I ran from the restaurant, which is about a block and a half away, in dress shoes because I was dressed up because we actually had just seen a magic show. Of all the things to see on this day, on the 13th of December, sorry, got the month all messed up, we had seen a magic show. Anyway, and you can see it on Hulu, by the way. It's called The Illusionists. So I come over and... There are two police officers and my dog. And my dog is sitting there, like, laying out and, like, kind of breathing heavy and kind of panting. And I'm just like, okay, not what I was expecting to see because I'm expecting to see a much more gruesome scene, which was horrifying anyway. So the dog's outside, and I'm, like, completely in shock because her leg is broken. She's got her right leg and the front arm, the front paw, just completely broken. Like, it's just all messed up, like.
Oh.
Kind of the way my hand is. So it's broken right up here.
I don't know that I can take any more details. I just want to let you know that ahead of time.
Okay. So I'll fast forward. So I want no more details about how the dog looked. She looked pretty good. That was a surprising thing. She looked okay. And the police officer was with her and I'm freaking out. I'm trying to figure out what to do. And they're like, what's going on? I'm like, I got to go upstairs and close that window off thing because I have another dog and I don't want something to happen to her. The other dog's a complete chicken. So that's probably unlikely to happen. But it was very unlikely for Audrey the Daredevil, who I've always thought that if I drove her in a car with a window down far enough, she would jump out, which is why I never did it. So I go upstairs. They tell me to get a blanket so I can pick her up and bring her to somewhere. And they're like, we can take her to the hospital. And I said, can I ride with her? And the cops are like, yeah, you can ride with her. Because obviously I'm not really thinking at this point, because I'm thinking, hey, this is really fucked up.
It's crazy. Yeah.
This was what happened. So this is why, like, so on Wednesday, whatever, I'll get to this story through as I can. So we go, there's a lady screaming at us, and one of the neighbors, she's the one who called us. I figured later the cops who had been sitting outside and had heard when this had happened and heard the dog whimpering, they came out. I guess that they basically pressed all the buzzers until somebody came out. Our neighbors across the hall have our phone number in case of an emergency, and they have our keys in case of an emergency. And so they talked. They were telling me, hey, go to Blue Pearl, go to Blue Pearl, which is the name of a specialty vet. It's got a 24-hour ER. So she's screaming at me, go to Blue Pearl, go to Blue Pearl. I'm like, I don't know what to do. So I just, let's go to Blue Pearl. Go with the cops. The cops are awesome. So I pick up the dog, and she's super quiet and really relatively pleasant. I put her in the back of the car. The cops are like, move your car. Go through the light. Why aren't these fucking guys moving? They've got to fucking, like, they're going back and forth, being calm, getting cars out of the way. We get to the hospital. And so the dog goes on a gurney, pick her up, put her on a gurney. And so she goes down to the actual, like, place where she's all hooked up to stuff. So they go, do you want to see her? I said, sure. And so I show up and I look at this dog, and there's a vet tech behind her. And because I process emotions weirdly, I start to laugh at her, because I'm like, Audrey, you're the bulletproof one. You're not supposed to do this, because Tori, her sister, is allergic to, like, everything, and dust mites included. So dust mites will basically mess up her ears and lead to an ear infection that could lead to other health problems. So she can't eat certain animal proteins. So she's the one that's fragile as hell, but Audrey's the bulletproof one. So she does this crazy thing. The vet tech is horrified, okay? This lady is standing behind Audrey, and I'm laughing at my dog, who's busted up. And she looks good, though. I mean, she looks like she's just sitting there. And I'm like, I can't believe you did this. So it was pretty rough from Saturday until Wednesday. Wednesday is when I went to see the dog again. I saw her, like, every day. And so we had to get some surgery on her, spinal surgery, because I didn't realize her back legs weren't moving because she had bruised her spinal cord. And her spine was out of whack. So they fixed her spine. They fixed the leg in the front. And on Wednesday, we needed to talk to see how she was doing, because this is the day that she was out of all the surgeries. And let's see if she's on the mend or not. So that's why I wasn't here Wednesday, because I was at the vet talking to the vets and going like, okay, so where are we? So let's get to the actual good part. So the dog is finally out of the ICU. She was in the ICU for like a week. She does have feeling and can put weight on her back legs. So she's going to be able to walk again, which is really pretty important. And then what was the other thing? Her arm is going to heal. She busted her jaw, it turned out. This dog is now in physical therapy upstate somewhere else right now, because I can't have her go up and down the stairs, because I live on the fourth floor. It's a walk up. And thankfully, there was an arrangement that was set up such that she can go upstate and be in a house where it'd be much easier for her. So it looks like this dog is going to be okay, because her internal organs are good. Her jaw might need some work, which is fine. She lost some teeth. Wasn't so worried about the teeth. I was more worried about the walking thing. But this dog is some kind of one. She's a fucking lunatic for jumping out the window. I don't even know how, because the space is so tiny. And the other thing is, when I came up here, they're like little toys on the air conditioner, little Funko Pop, the little toys. Nothing was disturbed. It was as if she had just slid out. It's insane. I have no I don't have the cloud storage on my drop cam, so I didn't have the ability to rewind and take a look at what happened. Nor do I really want to know what happened, but that messed me up a bit. Tori got to see Audrey at the hospital Monday, and they were both sniffing each other like crazy, which is neat. And so it's been a really rough week. I probably aged a shit ton during that week because it was touch and go, and ICUs are not cheap. And, you know, you got to think about horrible things and whatever. But so the dog got out, and she got out, and now she's out of the hospital. Now she's actually in a rehab center. So she's going to be hopefully okay in the next, like, 4 to 6 weeks. And so the neurologist was very positive. So this is what you listen to Podcasts Without Pretense for. You look for the drama, and I brought it because Audrey is a fucking daredevil. And if you have a dog or a pet at home, you know, give it a hug or something, because I'm just like, geez, Louise, this crazy-ass dog. And it was just – it was pretty rough. So – no pun intended.
Right.
It's not. But
no,
I totally
understand. You know, last year was when I lost Falstaff, and the year before that I had lost Thisbe, which were my two dogs that I had had. Thisbe was 15 years old, and Falstaff was 17. And about 2 or 3 years before Thisbe died, or really, I had to put her to sleep. I had to put both of them to sleep, and that is a tough decision. Even when you know it's the right one to make, it's really not easy. But about 2 or 3 years before I had to do that, Thisbe suffered a really bad pancreatitis. And for a while, it looked like she wasn't going to pull through with that. And we had to take her to an emergency vet, and she had to be kept there for a few days. So I know exactly what you mean when you're talking about them being really expensive, because I've been through that. And I mean, but they're part of your family. It's you know, you're like, I can't like say that it's not worth it, right?
Yeah, and then it's also like, you know, there's tuition for my son in the future. But let me just be very clear. The whole point of that story was that's why I missed the episode. And Eric's
right.
Not here because he got a dinner reservation that he had forgotten
and
about.
And forgot about it, yeah, yeah.
Which we have a standing appointment.
Yeah. In this case, we will not punish Ayaz by making him watch another movie by himself, because it's not like he was going on a competing podcast at our same time slot. Yeah.
Yes. So
this is a gimme. This is a gimme.
We're going to choose to put Eric to sleep.
Exactly.
Don't tell Eric.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing, Ayaz. I'm really hoping, first of all, we haven't talked about whether or not we're going to be doing an episode next week. I'm assuming we're going to try to do one because it's not yet going to be a holiday next Wednesday. Mm-hmm. But we certainly haven't talked about what we're going to do the following week, which is we're probably going to have to miss one because you and I will both be at CES.
Unless we do a double episode, which we could do next
week.
Right.
We could record a double and then release the second half the week when we're out.
So folks who want to deal with 2 hours of us, including our producer, Suncast, he's probably like, fuck you for even contemplating such a thing. We could probably do the second one, maybe on a Hangout, so he doesn't have to be stuck. But or some other time, because we should probably double up next week. So anyway, what we're saying is you might, if you subscribe to the show, as we know you do, clearly, because there's millions of you that listen to this show, there might not be a gap in the show, because I kind of really, once we did some rescheduling, once we figured this out, and I was like, screw it, Wednesday I have to make sure nothing else gets in the way. I like, we're at 12, oh, this is 11 weeks, and I think next week we'll be 12. I don't want to break that streak, and I really like that streak of episodes that are out.
Keep it going as long as we possibly can.
Yeah,
I agree, and I think you know, also, it'll be nice if we ever can goddamn talk about Redeemer.
Ah, yes, the movie that I have not seen yet. But you know what I was watching
Fuck
today?
Fuck you!
What I was watching today was there's a shit ton of movies on Lifetime. There's a Xfinity.
God damn it, Ayaz! Jesus!
I know,
look,
I know.
You should not be allowed. All right, okay. I'm going to allow you like maybe three Lifetime movies because you've been through a fucking hell with this dog. I mean, it's an emotionally trying time, and maybe you just need to sit and watch a few Lifetime movies and have yourself a good cry. But after that, damn it, you should be watching Redeemer. First of all, it's not that bad.
And I picked it. That's the second part of this.
God damn it. Okay, so it's really not that bad. I mean, it's not great. It's an action movie that's not very inspired, but it's not like it's not poorly done. Some of the fight choreography is amazing.
I guess I should watch it while Liz is away. Liz is over in California right now with her family. So I'm watching whatever stupid shit I want. And surprisingly, it's not a lot of horror. Go figure. I don't want to see a lot of gore right now.
Yeah.
So my mindset's a little bit – it's so annoying because I love stupid horror movies, you know? And it's hard to be like, oh, yeah, you know what? I don't want to freak out at all right now because I don't know what's going to make me crack. Because at some point I'm going to crack because I haven't really freaked out.
Well, here,
I was very calm.
Here's a similar thing in a way, okay? So I've had a couple of issues with – I live in a townhouse, right? It's a three-story townhouse with a rooftop deck. And on the rooftop, there's been apparently there's some little hairline crack somewhere in the membrane that's supposed to be waterproof. You can see where this is going, right? Mm-hmm. And so water's been coming in. So we're getting this fixed. But because of the holidays and because of just the company being backed up, it's not going to happen for a few days. And we're having rain every single day between now and then. So the sound of rain used to be something that could relax me. Now I have anxiety when I hear it. Because I'm dealing
with
water.
That's so annoying.
Yeah, I can't relax when I hear. And it's calm right now, but we've had massive thunderstorms today. Like lightning striking just outside the neighborhood kind of thunderstorms. So it has been a stressful day for me just because I don't know when it's going to get to a point where water is going to start leaking into the house again. If it doesn't rise to the level on the roof, because it's a flat roof, if it doesn't rise to the right level, then water doesn't seep in. So if it's raining at a light pace, it drains off the roof fast enough for it to not be a problem. It's when it rains hard that it becomes a possibility. But if it doesn't rain too hard for too long, I can be okay. The fact that it's going to be sustained raining for the next few days pretty much means I'm going to get water. So that's fun. But
I assume you don't have roof access then, so you can't just like put a tarp up there.
Well, the problem with that is that I don't know how I would put a tarp up where it would actually, because you know, think of it like an open box, right? Because there's walls all around the edges. So if I put a tarp down, the water's just going to end up going underneath the tarp unless I can somehow lift the tarp up to such a point so that any incoming water, even the water coming down the sides of the box, right, the walls, is directed toward either the front or the back of the house so that it can drain off. And I can't really – there's not really a way to do that. So if I put a tarp up, all it would do is probably delay how long it takes the water to make its way down to where the – mm-hmm. problem is. And I've got a deck up there that's gonna all have to come up. We're gonna have to replace all of that, which honestly at this point I'm like, I just want it fixed. I can't, like, I have some issues in the house because of this, but I can't fix them until the roof is fixed, because otherwise the problem just gets worse, right? Like, you could go ahead and replace stuff, but if the problem is still there, you're just gonna have to replace it again. So that's been my fun Christmas time project.
this is the most depressing episode of Podcast Without Pretense.
It's just been really one of those things where, you know, you're also trying to deal with everything else. Just like you, Ayaz. I mean, you have this terrible thing happen, but you still have to do your job. You're still a dad. You know, you still got all these other things that you have to attend to. It's not like you can put all that on hold. Yeah.
Can you believe this shit? Like, the weird thing is, I don't think you get really prepared for any of this shit when you're a kid. You're like, you know what? I can handle maybe one or two things at a time. not all of this shit at once.
Yeah.
Because it's not a good thing.
And you know, I think sometimes I continuing the serious conversation for a bit, sometimes I think about, man, earlier generations must have really had their shit together to be able to deal with stuff. And then I think, wait a minute, our lives are way more complicated today than previous generations' lives were for multiple reasons.
Yeah, you can't beat your kids anymore, clearly. them whiskey if they're mouthing off. You're like, okay, you can just take this and take a nap. Can't do that because then you're a bad parent. You're endangering a child.
But to be serious, you know, I think our lives are a lot more complicated. And you can argue that there's been some, you know, infantilization or just the arrested development concept that people aren't prepared to be adults the way they used to be. I think being an adult in earlier generations probably was not that it was easy, but it was more simple. So not that it was a walk through the fucking park, but it was manageable. These days, being an adult sucks so hard. Like, there's just so much shit. I can tell you this. My grandparents never had to fucking deal with a homeowners association. All right. That's just that alone. but So at any rate, let's get on to more happy topics. Have you, like one of the things I mentioned before we started recording was that I finally saw Ant-Man last night. I rented it on Xbox. I just used the Microsoft version, rented the HD version, and watched Ant-Man. I had not seen it before. Now I'm down to just one movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the official canon of Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, that I have not seen. Can you guess which one it is?
Thor: The Dark World.
Nope. Saw that in the theater.
Okay.
I'll tell you this. It was the second movie to come out in the official Marvel Cinematic Universe canon.
This is great. This is a bit of trivia.
Yeah.
Let's see. So, I know Iron Man's the first one, though.
Yes, that is true.
So, arguably,
this movie came out 1 month after Iron Man.
Well, yeah, so that arguably is the Incredible Hulk, where you have...
That is officially part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, but it's completely skippable. You know, I'm actually working, or I was working on a piece that's going to run... I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but I'm working on a piece that's going to run in a certain publication. And we were talking about how this whole comic book universe thing works, and how essentially, even though the Incredible Hulk is... technically a part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, it is completely skippable, other than maybe the cameo at the end, which is kind of neat, but that's it, because that version of the Hulk, the only likable version of the Hulk is the one that shows up in the Avengers. That is the best version. It is like since the Bill Bixby days, it is the best version of the Hulk you will see in film, because the other ones are like... The ILM just wasn't with it yet with the first version with Ang Lee, and then the version that I think Rhythm and Hughes did a lot of the Incredible Hulk with Ed Norton. And there were so many rewrites such that Ed Norton, I think, got a writing credit, which is a real fucking problem if you think about it.
Ed Norton, he didn't just get a writing credit. He got the writing credit. No one else was included.
Oh, he got...
The screenplay by Ed Norton. Yeah, no, the other writers who worked on that script were not included in that credit.
And no offense to Edward Norton, if he does, and actually we know he listens to the show. No offense to you, sir, but that's just not... that should not be happening in the course of a film. It seems like there should be a script. That almost sounds like there was a ton of rewrites on the set, which is not good. And now, you know, Incredible Hulk is not offensive. It's not like, oh, this is the shittiest one, I can't believe it. But so that's the other one you haven't seen. So I'm just spoiling it all for you. Saying it's
no,
completely...
I knew everything you've said about it. Like, I've absorbed all the most of the salient points. I just haven't seen it. But I kind of want to see it just to be kind of a completionist. I'm glad I saw Ant-Man. You've seen Ant-Man, right?
I saw Ant-Man in the theater. So what did you think of that?
I thought it was okay. I thought it was entertaining. It was very funny. It had a lot of funny moments in it. I thought the best special effect in the entire movie was making Michael Douglas look young at the beginning. Because it looked great. I mean, he looked great.
Digital makeup.
Yeah, he looked like he was ready to step back onto the set of Wall Street or something. He looked great. And it was fun seeing Agent Carter at the beginning of Ant-Man. I was glad to see her in it. Oh, by the way,
we're going to spoil Ant-Man, I assume.
Yeah. I mean, we'll talk a little bit about it. I mean, we don't have to go into the whole plot. Here's the thing. If you have seen Iron Man and or Iron Man 2, you've essentially seen Ant-Man. Because yeah. The basic plot points are the same. Which is that you've got a character who has a suit. The suit allows the character to do stuff. And ultimately, the character's nemesis is another person who has a very similar suit that allows that character to do very similar stuff. And kind of like in a combination of Iron Man and Iron Man 2, you've got the villain has an axe to grind against the hero, though not in this case, not really the hero in this case, but the hero's predecessor, Hank Pym, who was the original Ant-Man in the comic books. That's the guy that the villain has an axe to grind against. But Scott Lang, who is the successor to Hank Pym, is essentially the champion who stands in the place of Hank Pym, who can no longer assume the mantle of Ant-Man because of the toll it has taken on him. I thought it was fine. The thing I posted was like, I liked Ant-Man better when it was called Iron Man. But yeah, go ahead.
You're very right. That's one of the reasons why I thought about Ant-Man. I was like, this is kind of skippable too, because it's a fun movie. No question about that. You're right. The comedy, I think, is actually pretty good. It's one of the stronger comedy Marvel movies. A lot of the other ones are just action-packed, and there's a bit of comedy to make it a little lighter.
I would say
lighter.
it's definitely secondary to Guardians of the Galaxy, which I think is that Guardians of the Galaxy, there are two movies out of the Marvel Cinematic Universe that I think are excellent. There are several that I think are very good, but there are only two that I think are excellent. Guardians of the Galaxy is one of them. But my favorite is still Captain America Winter Soldier. I think that's the best film that I have seen in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, keeping in mind I still haven't seen Incredible Hulk.
I think that position might be safe right now. I don't know. Maybe you will experience some kind of head trauma before you watch Incredible Hulk such that you have different viewpoints. But yeah, I think you're right, by the way. I think I'm biased because I'm a Captain America fan, but Captain America 2, Winter Soldier, that thing, is actually a very good movie. Like, forget the whole Captain America element. The movie's actually very good. It's a well-told story, and I like when that happens.
I think it's one of the best-paced films in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's paced perfectly so that it's really action-packed. You get a couple of moments to kind of catch your breath, and then it ramps up even more. It's a compelling spy thriller kind of story. There's the personal element because once Captain America realizes who the Winter Soldier is, that really makes a new complication in his life. Plus the revelation of how deeply Hydra has infiltrated S.H.I.E.L.D. is a huge reveal that's awesome. And really drives home the fact that some of these evil organizations can even thrive despite the fact that their leader has been apparently killed. So I think Winter Soldier, I agree. I think it's a great movie, period. And definitely the strongest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Guardians of the Galaxy, I think, is a great excellent movie too. I think it's largely entertaining despite a couple of flaws, but the flaws aren't important enough for it to not be an excellent movie. I just think Winter Soldier doesn't even have those flaws.
This goes to show you how great Ant-Man was, because we started off with Ant-Man, we went somewhere totally else, because Ant-Man is kind of missable. If somebody just gave you like a 2-minute synopsis on Ant-Man, if it happened like in Captain America Civil War, or if it happened in Avengers 3 or whatever, they were like, so this guy, he's the successor to Ant-Man, and he's got a suit, and he's just really good at using it now. Okay, that's it.
I think I think the best part about Ant-Man is how it sets up Ant-Man's involvement with the Avengers moving forward, and the Wasp, as well as the Wasp. And that I think was fine. I agree that it's probably skippable. Like, there's nothing in it that is absolutely necessary. I think it's fun to see it, to kind of set up the relationship between Ant-Man and Falcon, because they have a confrontation in Ant-Man. And through the whole thing, as Ant-Man is fighting Falcon, he's just apologizing the whole time. And I like that, because it kind of sets up what could be really interesting in the next, in Captain America Civil War. I don't know how big a part Ant-Man will have. It's probably very tiny in Captain America Civil War. But then I don't know how big a role Scarlet Witch will have in that either. She's going to be in it. And
oh, yeah, right.
Spider-Man's going to be in it. We haven't even seen Spider-Man in any of the previews. I wish they would at least hint at Spider-Man's presence, because I think that that would generate even more excitement for the movie. But
I think they have a long time before this thing comes out. It's May 6th, I think it is. So they could start teasing that around February or March, and that would get people really interested. But like, you don't need to start it now, because Star Wars, this is Disney, right? Disney's got all the damn properties. They're like, we're doing Star Wars now. We're going to get everybody all in a fever pitch about it. Which I will see this. I need to see this movie only for the sake of, I don't want it spoiled. I'm not the biggest Star Wars guy. I do like what J.J. Abrams does, and I'm a little bit put off by the prequels. I think that's what screwed me up, because I saw the movies. I'm like, oh, they're pretty good. I saw the prequels, and I'm like, oh, this is shit. And now I'm like a little trepidatious when it comes to the new ones. But I have to see it, because I can't exist in the world with RSS readers or Twitter or Reddit. I can't be on these things very easily without seeing this movie. After that fever pitch is over, we'll have the Spider-Man like tease at some point, I would imagine, with Captain America 3.
My spoiler-free review of Star Wars Episode 7 is, I liked it. It frustrated me.
Why do you say... Okay, I can't ask you that.
I can't tell you why it frustrated me. It would spoil the movie for you. I can say this. If I were to rank the Star Wars films right now, like all of them together, it would go 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3. From my favorite to my least favorite, or
wait,
favorite
wait, you put,
to
you yes, put 1, 2, 3. You don't.
We've had this discussion. Yes, Phantom Menace is the least bad of the three prequels.
Okay, we have argued this. You're right.
Yeah. So, Phantom Menace, I hate. Attack of the Clones, I loathe. Revenge of the Sith, I despise with a hatred that burns brighter than 1,000 exploding suns.
Sounds appropriate.
Yeah. And okay. It's funny, because I was actually watching another podcast, and they were having a discussion about Star Wars, and one of the guys on the show made essentially the same argument I make about which of the prequels are the worst. And I was floored that someone else agreed with my point of view, because almost everyone else says that the action in 2 and 3 make it better. And the decrease in Jar Jar Binks's screen time in 2 and 3 automatically make them better. Jar Jar Binks is an abomination. Don't get me wrong, but The fact that 2 has the worst on-screen romance of all time and 3 emasculates one of the greatest villains in cinema means that I have to rank them lower than part 1.
your points are I think very applicable. I started my son on Star Wars. We started with 4 or 5, and then we went back to 1, 2.
Oh, you went all the way back to 1?
We cut 1 out. 2, 3, back. The machete order. And
right.
He's very happy with the series so far. We're going to... very positive. I'm gonna have him for a week. We're gonna see the movie together. It'll be the three of us, Liz, me, and him. We can watch the movie. And so I'm sure he's gonna just love this thing because it's a fantastic world. And it's like this, it looks like the Rotten Tomatoes scores are really good. Everything's really good. I'm trying not to bank on that. I just wanted to be.
Like I said, I liked the movie. So, and one thing I can tell you right away, and it's not a spoiler, is that the performances in part 7 blow away all the performances in the prequels. We no longer have the problem of a lot of wooden characters with very little emotional expression populating the entire fucking movie the way the prequels were. Like, you could tell Ewan McGregor was being reined in for those prequels because there'd be little moments where he would add in just a bit of flair and you're like, oh, I wish there were more of that in this movie. I wish that these movies had more of a sense of joy about them. Even when things are going badly, at least to have it be entertaining to watch. And 7 gets that right. So that part is great. No argument, no complaint there. There's just some plot stuff that I found frustrating. And none of it is a game breaker, right? Like, none of it is a deal breaker. None of it would be to the point where I would say it's not worth your time watching. It is absolutely worth watching.
Okay. I do have one question, and this can be spoiled. How long is the movie?
I think it's like a little over 2 hours. I remember feeling as I was watching it that it felt long. Okay. And that was not to the point where I was bored. I just felt like it had been a long time. To be fair, though, there were a ludicrous number of previews before our screening. Like, a half hour block of previews before the movie ever started. And I saw a 9 p.m. screening on Thursday, the Thursday just as the movie was opening, and didn't get out of the theater till like almost midnight. So that's like a half hour. We did stay for all the credits too, but it was like a full half hour of previews before we even get to the Lucasfilm logo coming up. I will say this too. It is, and I knew this was going to be weird, but it is so odd to watch a Star Wars movie that does not begin with the Fox fanfare.
Right, because Disney bought it. I think the only one that still has that is Episode 4, because they still have rights to it, I think.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. Fox has, well, they have distribution rights to the original trilogy for a certain number of years, but Episode 4, they have those rights in perpetuity.
Which means you'll get the big... So in the beginning, you're supposed to hear that fanfare, and then it goes into that little, like, twinkle noise. But is there something that's similar? I thought I had heard about this is supposed to be... No, nothing. Okay.
When the Lucasfilm logo comes up, it's totally silent. And this is also weird. If you do watch it all the way to the end, and you wait for all the credits to go up, there's no stinger or anything like that. So just letting you know that. But it's so weird to see the Bad Robot logo thing come up at the very end after the credits have rolled. Just to see the Bad Robot Productions come up at the end of a Star Wars movie is just like, all right, the world is odd.
Wait, I'm thinking the Disney logo is going to throw me off. That's the first one. It's like, that shouldn't be.
Yeah, it's definitely weird that it's an X-Wing flying over instead of Tinkerbell. That's not true.
That should be true, actually. That doesn't sound wrong at all.
It's just an Ewok on fire. or a Jawa on fire. Ootini!
That would be probably pretty funny, actually. This should be a thing. I don't know. There must be a bunch of animated GIFs of alternate Star Wars opens with the Disney logo, where it's being animated by either an inflamed Ewok or a...
Imagine this, Ayaz. Imagine that in a future Kingdom Hearts game, you will encounter Disney characters, Marvel characters, and Star Wars characters. All in one game.
I'm going to play Nick Fury versus Mace Windu, and it's going to be fucking awesome.
It's not really a fighting game, but I like your style.
I can make him fight. Just make him angry. Nick Fury's very angry. It's not my fault. But yeah, that'd be kind of neat. That's one of the weird ones I thought about when I was watching. I was watching this YouTube series called it's from Fanboy Flicks, I think it's called, or something like that. And he was going over each of these things, and they were showing. I completely forgot how lame the fight was with Mace Windu and the Emperor in episode 2. And I was just like, oh, wow, that's right. The Jedi are completely incompetent in the prequel for some reason.
It's not in 2, it's in 3.
Oh, it's in 3, okay. It's one of those.
Yeah, because they don't reveal Sidious being, Palpatine being Sidious until episode 3. And I have only seen episode 3 once. I have no memory of that fight. Other than the fact that Mace Windu dies, as I recall.
So, you know, what we should be talking about is the Lifetime movies I was watching, including Dirty Teacher. It's called Teacher, Jonathan. Okay, yeah. Good. That's old. Have you ever watched Charles in Charge?
Yes. He's okay. In charge of our days and our nights.
Right. But the reboot version, not that first version with the Pembrokes, or they were the first family?
The reboot with Nicole Eggert and... I can't remember any of the other actors' names.
Well, that's
I remember
that's
hers. Not,
well, then there's the other sister, Josie Davis. She's the star of this movie. She is the dirty teacher. Okay.
That's so weird. I would have always pegged Nicole as being the dirty teacher in any of those scenarios, but okay.
Nicole Eggert did do Baywatch, so she has had some roles that were about her figure.
She was also in a very steamy movie with one of the Coreys. As I recall, I remember distinctly when it came on, I was like, "Aw, this is all sorts of wrong."
Well, anyway, Josie Davis,
dirty teacher.
She's very convincing as the dirty teacher.
When they say dirty teacher, Ayaz, do they mean like morally, or is she like teaching botany? Or archaeology.
No, she doesn't. She does not appear to look like Pigpen from the Peanuts movie. She's a morally bad person, because the plot of the movie. So, the plot of the movie is, it's really supposed to be about this teenager who is upset that a teacher is trying to steal her boyfriend. Okay.
Wow. Now,
that's not the way the movie's playing out, because it's really more about the teacher, because it's called Dirty Teacher, and the teenager's really not the protagonist, because she's really barely in the movie. But I'm going with the Lifetime description. That's how I picked the movie. I just see a link of text, and I'm like, okay, I want to see what that looks like, and it tells me that's the idea. And I'm hoping that it's completely wrong, because it'd be kind of silly if this teenager was completely misreading it. I'm like, maybe it's, you know, Dirty Teacher in the mind of a student, but it's completely wrong. No, this woman is trying to steal this boy away, and her backstory is excellent, because she's been told all along as a child, you are an ugly child, you're hideous, you're a freak. And now she's hot and everything, but she's still having these flashbacks. And then she has a flashback where she decides to stab her own mother with a syringe, and then they explain, oh, she died of an insulin overdose. Like, okay, she is a dirty teacher at this point. Also, I don't know what class that she teaches yet, because I haven't quite picked that up in the plot.
It sounds like it's a very complicated movie. Does at any point does she receive a first edition of the Iliad?
No.
Do you know what I'm making a reference to?
No, I don't.
So there was the movie that came out this year, the beginning of this year, The Boy Next Door. Jennifer Lopez was in it, and Jennifer Lopez is playing a woman who was cheated on, and then she meets a much younger man and has a fling with him, and it turns out that he's like a student, and she's a teacher, and then she regrets her dalliance with the young man, but he becomes obsessed with her, and so it becomes one of those things where you got the dangerous young man stalking the woman stories. And at one point he gives her a copy of the Iliad, which is explained is a first edition. And that just raised so much ridicule online because the Iliad, of course,
it's really, really, really old.
And it was it was passed down in oral tradition and finally written down. And it's in public domain. And there are literally hundreds of different versions of it. So a first edition would be nothing. It's not like a first edition of a Charles Dickens novel or something. It was one of those things that got a lot of like people poked fun at the film just for that. It was one of those where I wanted to find someone like Red Letter Media to do a full critical breakdown of the movie, because it looked like the kind of thing that would be a lot of fun to pick apart, but not to actually watch. I never found any. I haven't really looked that hard, but I haven't found anyone who's done that kind of treatment to it.
Is the character portrayed as an idiot? Is that the concept? Like he's just really gullible?
No.
At some point?
No. I think the audience takes that role. The audience is treated like an idiot.
Okay. Good to know. That's The Boy Next Door, starring Jennifer Lopez, who will now be on the NBC police show, I think, Shades of Blue. And I know this because I saw an ad on a bus, because something about it's not just black and white when you're in the police force, it's shades of blue or something stupid. It looked horrible. It looked horrible on the bus ad. Think about that. How shitty.
She plays Harley Santos.
That's her name. What?
Harley Santos.
Is this in the movie?
No, this is Shades of Blue. Show? Shades of Blue. H-A-R-L-E-E Santos.
It's like, we need to have a name that's fun and silly.
Yeah, and The Boy Next Door, she's just
tough.
She's just Claire Peterson in The Boy Next Door. That's fucking boring.
She's got to sound ethnic too. Santos. But she's also, which is also, what, isn't that like Spanish for saint? So
yes.
She's the good cop. She's the tough but good cop.
It's good to have subtle hints to the audience to let them know how they're supposed to feel about characters, because
I think high school English class, I really did not understand why the hell they were teaching me symbolism in books and, you know, finding meaning in all of these fiction works. I always thought, this is bullshit. You never need to know any of this. This is pointless. And I maintain that because it's ruining all the shit I ever will watch, because I'm like, well, that's not clever at all. She's like tough, like maybe she's like the bike Harley, or like she's like the Joker Harley thing, or no. And then she's a saint. Like, I actually analyze this shit now, thanks to you, Mr. McKenna. Thanks, Mr. McKenna. But thanks to you, Mr. McKenna. Asshole.
I'm thankful for my scholarship in English. I mean, I majored in English literature, so I was all about it. But there is something. See, for me, it's interesting because for the longest time, I was the person who would go see a movie and just be a passive audience member watching a film, hopefully being entertained by it, and then I would walk out and that'd be it. And then as I started reading more about film and really indulging in reading folks who actually practice film criticism, like they studied it and they know what they're talking about. Sometimes they're filmmakers themselves and can really deconstruct what's going on and explain how something works or doesn't work. Once I really got into that, now I start to notice it too. Not to the degree that those guys can, because I still don't have that background, and I haven't really had the chance to critically look at all the ways a story comes together like that, but it's certainly more than I used to. And so now whenever I see any movie, I can't help. I'm like, well, here's the part of the movie where the beat they were trying to hit totally misfires, and that's why the next 20 minutes are just a mess, that kind of thing. I recognize that stuff now. Not enough where I could actually write a good movie. I don't want to give anyone any false hope, because I bet if I wrote a movie, it would be a hell of a stinker.
But you'll know why. You can criticize it later and be like, oh, yeah.
That's true. Yeah, no, I can look. I'll look at it and like, oh, man. I totally gave away the denouement in the first 15 minutes of the film. There's literally no point in watching.
I got to watch Miss Congeniality recently for the first time. And And so this is related to what we're talking about. And okay, I'm like, okay, what's this character's name? Her name is something Hart. I'm like, oh, okay, Hart. That sounds like, because she's got a lot of something. Oh, what's her first name? Oh, it's Grace. Oh, something she doesn't have a lot of, and then something she's got a lot of. Grace Hart. I get it. That's really clever. And Liz just like turns to me. She's like, yeah, you're right. I never thought about that. I'm like, it's a Sandra Bullock movie. I don't really want to watch it. And they're making it really fucking obvious. So I'm going to smile because you put on the movie. Since she doesn't watch this show, I don't think she's really going to care. I didn't dislike the movie, but it was also unbelievable at times.
Which sure.
I know this is a bold stand to make on Miss Congeniality, a movie that's like 20 years old at this point, but however old it is, it wasn't realistic enough. So if you're going to have an agent go undercover to be a contestant in a pageant, make it more real. I can't wait for the gritty reboot of Miss Congeniality one day.
So there's some issues. This reminds me of some of the issues I had with Star Wars Episode 7. And ultimately, I wonder if this newfound ability for me to critique movies is kind of screwing things up, because I end up having expectations that are unfair for certain films. And then another part of me gets mad because I'm like, no, why should we give certain types of movies a pass by saying logic doesn't matter in this movie, just sit back and enjoy it? When I'm like, no, you could fucking make an enjoyable movie and still make it make sense. And it's, again, little things, nothing huge. But, like, I'll watch a movie that was clearly made just for the purposes of entertainment. And if I see something that doesn't quite sit well with me, I balk at it. And we've talked about this before, too. It's crazy that we can watch a movie that's about something truly fantastical, like completely impossible in the real world. That part we can buy into. But as soon as a character does something that doesn't make sense within the context of that world, we're like, whoa, hang on a fucking second. I know the giant robots are rampaging through the streets and squishing alien heads. There's no way that guy would buy that kind of Coca-Cola in that particular shop, because that particular shop only sells Pepsi products. That'd be the kind of thing we would balk at. And
true. That happened to me with Cloverfield. I'm sure you've seen that, the found footage movie of this disaster monster thing. And I'm like, listen, I know I'll buy that this camera is fucking indestructible and all kinds of stuff happened to it. What I could not buy was the 5.1 surround sound with this bass reproduction that was fucking unbelievable. It was just unbelievable for any camera. Because
the monster makes some really loud noises and it shakes the whole theater if you're seeing it in a theater setting.
Yeah, and there's destruction and violence and all this other stuff, and this camera is really, really terrific. Its battery life is amazing.
Yes.
It's unless he's carrying one of those old like bandoliers full of battery packs or like a waste pack or something. Just the audio was the thing that was throwing me off, and I'm like, you're watching a fucking monster movie, okay? Something came out of the ocean and is just destroying New York City, because it's okay again to do that. Destroying New York City, and you're confused about what mic is he using, probably because I do video work and I'm like, well, what mic is that?
Found footage films in particular have a real tough problem with that kind of thing. The biggest one being, why the fuck would anyone be determined to run video on this moment? Like, there's a movie, The Sacrament, which was it was essentially a fictional telling of Jonestown. That was not Jonestown in the movie, but it's essentially Jonestown, right? It's a cult. There's a cult leader who has essentially brainwashed all his followers who follow him blindly. And in the movie, there's a journalist team from Vice that are investigating the cult to kind of find out what is actually going on in this place. And it's in like a Central American country. So it's outside the jurisdiction of the United States. And there are a lot of family members who are concerned because they've lost people who have gone and joined this cult and they cut off all communication back home. So the team goes in to find out what's really going on. And it pretty much unfolds exactly the way you would expect it to unfold. That's one of the big problems. One of the two big problems of that movie is that it doesn't have any surprises in it, because it happens exactly the way you would expect, especially if you know anything about the Jonestown massacre, or mass suicide, if you prefer. The second thing is that there are multiple sequences where characters are literally just walking from one place to another, and the conversation they're having is essentially exposition so that we, the audience, know what's going on. But if you've ever worked in video at all, you'd be like, there's no way they'd have the camera and microphone on when they're walking from the parking lot to this building, because you wouldn't waste the battery or the memory card. Like, there's no sane group of people would just be like, oh, I'm just going to let this sucker run as we walk nonchalantly across this area and not actually do anything germane to creating the piece that we're here to film. And it drove me nuts. I'm like, that's what I hate about found footage movies, is that you have to find an excuse for the camera to be on. And if it doesn't work, then it pulls me out of the film. I would prefer it to be a cinematic film, not in the found footage category, because then you don't even have that as a question. You could have the characters walking across a field and you just see them and they're carrying the camera equipment and everything, but it's done as a movie, not found footage. It'd be fine. And I understand you want found footage to increase the level of stress and anxiety an audience member feels when a character's in danger. I get it. But it still pulls me out of the movie when I see these sequences.
Okay, so I was, for some reason, while Jonathan was explaining this whole thing, I suggest you do this when you listen to this podcast. We've got to do this on some kind of an actual computer. Have Hans Zimmer's score from Man of Steel playing the song Flight while Jonathan's explaining that exact story of the movie that's kind of like Jamestown. What is the movie called again?
The Sacrament.
Sacrament? Yeah, so have it going while he's saying it. It sounds so unbelievably epic. It's like, okay, what happens next? What happens next? And you're just tearing the movie apart, which is great. And you're tearing apart the concept. But it sounds amazing. So for some reason, if you decide to do that, go ahead and do that. But yeah, I like your idea of like, okay, so you got your found footage, and then you cut away to like the all-seeing eye, which is the camera. Like, here you go. You get to see it. And then we go back in, because I think that could work. But that's a whole other
genre. You just have to establish that early enough in the film where the audience buys into it. And you don't have to force it. Like, you don't even have to make it particularly like a big grand gesture or anything. I think most audiences will go with that pretty quickly once they realize what the conceit is. There's certain found footage movies I think work much better than others. I think the first Paranormal Activity movie is fine, although there are sequences where the couple are having just a conversation and you'd wonder, why would you bother having a camera set up at this point? But it's a little more believable. I think particularly the second Paranormal Activity movie, where it's all security cameras, while it's still weird to have security cameras pick up such great audio wherever they happen to be, at least then you're like, okay, well, these cameras are all over the house. That's why we can cut to different camera angles and still have the conceit of this being found footage. It's when you have characters running around with cameras and you have to have those scenes where two characters are relating to one another, and you're like, why would you ever keep the camera going? I think one other thing that did this well, although the actual short film was total shit, was when we watched VHS Viral, and they had the skateboarders at section. And the only reason it worked well is because they all had fucking GoPros on. So
It actually made logical sense why they would have that.
Right. So it's not like they're trying to film something as shit is going crazy around them. They have cameras attached to their heads because they're wearing helmets that have GoPros on them. And then you're like, okay, yeah, you're going to get whatever they happen to be facing. Like, that part was totally okay. Now, that being said, if you go back and listen to the podcast where we break down VHS Viral, you'll hear that none of us liked that segment.
Okay, I think we need to look into the future if you're ready to look into the future. Okay, so next time on Podcast Without Pretense.
Christmas was amazing. I got a flood.
Eric, that is a very salient, brilliant point. You are the most eloquent I've ever heard you.